Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's Informal Courses for Adults.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What vision do you have for living out your golden years? The way you live could very well be determined by where you live, and that reality is driving a lot of senior Americans to newly created cities designed from the ground up to cater to older people, in part by keeping younger people out. There are recreational activities, early bird specials, child-free swimming pools, and golf courses galore. But are there drawbacks to withdrawing from real life? Andrew Bleckman's new book is called Leisureville: Adventures in America's Retirement Utopias. In it, he profiles life in some of America's fastest-growing active adult communities. Most residents seem to love where they live, but Bleckman frets that all those carefree seniors in gated Sunbelt neighborhoods are abandoning hometowns that still need them and missing out on more genuine experiences that only life in the real world can offer. He's here with us now to talk about it. Andrew, welcome to Think.
Well, thank you, Chris.
This started for you when some neighbors that you just adored announced they were going down to Florida to live in a place called The Villages. What did they describe to you?
It was so strange. It sounded like science fiction. I barely believed it until they brought over newspaper clippings. It is the world's largest retirement community. It is 1.5 times the size of Manhattan, gated. And it will have a population eventually of 110,000 people, but no children are allowed. They can visit, but they get guest passes that basically time out like international visas.
And it was funny to me, your neighbor actually described to you, in all seriousness, she said, "Andrew, it's so nice, it's just like the Stepford Wives."
Yeah, she said, "It's just like the Stepford Wives, but real."
And so I guess that the appeal of this is that everything there is specifically catered to the needs of people who are older. Is that right?
That's exactly right. Although I'd say older. I certainly wouldn't say old. The gateway age is entry age is 55 years or older. And, you know, as many of us know, 55 is basically midlife at this point. They don't call it active adult communities by accident. So these aren't old folks. These are people in the prime of their lives.
And this is also big business starting up these places. Is that right?
It is the sweet spot of the housing sector. And you're looking at a housing sector that's obviously very bruised right now. But it is still the sweet spot of the housing sector. In fact, it's the fastest growing sector. It was before the recession and continues to be so. In fact, it's like the one heartbeat left in the housing sector right now.
Well, what's really interesting is that even if people enter at 55, there's no absolute guarantee that they will sort of live to enjoy the fruits of that 30-year mortgage they're taking on.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. When this was basically invented in Arizona in the desert about 50 years ago or so by a man named Del Webb, and actually that's called Sun City, and also right next door in a little community called Youngtown. At the time, you know, a gerontologist said, you can't do it. You can't separate older folks from their families. They'll just wither up and die in depression. And Del Webb wasn't really sure if he could sell 30-year mortgages to people that only had 5 to 10 years to live. But when he opened up his development on the opening weekend for people to take a look at it, they had a traffic jam that was several miles long. 100,000 people visited. They sold so many homes right away. Actually, they weren't even built yet, but they were sold, that they ran out of actually sales receipts.
Well, I got to tell you, my grandmother lived in a Del Webb community. She lived in Sun City West, and
sure.
It was nice. Everything was clean and brand new, and I can see where the appeal would be.
What years were those?
Oh gosh, she was there in the late 90s and early 2000s.
Okay, now it's interesting because that is a newer community than Sun City, so it's several years. It's about a decade newer or so. So it's still doing pretty well, although Sun City itself is getting a bit, ratty around the edges.
Yeah, and I suppose if they keep building new ones, there's not much appeal to the ones that are 20 or 30 years old.
Yeah, sadly, that's true. You got to figure, too, you know, they're built by developers, and once the developer's made his money, that's it. It's business. So he moves on. At that point, it's up to the residents to keep it up. And the people that move there aren't looking, I mean, they didn't move there to pay a lot of taxes. They're not looking to reinvest into their community. Who are you reinvesting for? I mean, the next round of retirees. And certainly that's not all that, you know, enthusiastic.
Yeah, and one thing that makes you crazy is the idea that these people move to these communities and they don't pay any school taxes.
No, that is the most fascinating thing about the whole. For me, the canary in the coal mine with this. I mean, I'm worried about segregation. I don't know about any time in human history that segregation was a good thing. The only thing I can think of is temporary segregation when you're quarantining someone, maybe with influenza. Yeah, what happened in Sun City was in the earlier days, they defeated 17 school bond measures in 12 years.
And I guess people will argue that they already paid their school taxes while their kids were going to school, and then they got to a certain age, and then they moved out.
Yeah, you know what, though? You're looking at the healthiest and wealthiest generation in human history, and that's no accident. It was given to them by the generations before them, who suffered mightily through the Great Depression and two world wars. You know, they worked hard so that this generation would have what they have. And that's kind of like the nature of things. You always, you know, I think the idea is that we leave the world a better place so that our generations after us can have it even better than we had it.
The other thing that worries you is the fact that they're just not around in our communities to sort of offer their perspective.
No, they're not around, and it's sad. You know, call me naive, but, you know, I enjoy being around my elders. I enjoy being around all ages. You know, I enjoy being around my toddler daughter, and I enjoy being around my neighbors who are in their 70s. There's a common complaint I hear from people who live in these communities is that today's children are just unruly. They don't want to be around other people's children, let alone pay for their schools. And my feeling is this. You know, it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you don't contribute to their school system, and you don't, you know, if you're not around there to help adjust their behavior, or at least set an example, or be an elder, you know, just traditionally plain old an elder, then what's going to happen to these kids? They're going to get worse.
Well, I know that there have been some legal challenges to the age restrictions on some of these communities. Would you talk for a minute about the Chaz incident?
Yeah, it worked like this. I mean, first of all, you have to be 55 or older, one person in the household to live in one of these communities. We're not talking 75, we're talking 55. You can be younger. You know, you can have a younger husband, for example, or wife. You can even have college-age children, I guess, but you can't be under 18. End of story, just can't. Now, that happened in Youngtown. Youngtown was the very, very first age-segregated community in America, quite possibly in human history. It was started by an idealist who came over from Russia to escape the pogroms at the turn of the last century. He started really as just a place to create a idyllic community where so-called oldsters, that's what they were called at the time, could age gracefully and affordably. Now, that was built at the time when Phoenix was like 20 miles away. Now, Phoenix, of course, grew closer and closer and closer and basically just about touches Youngtown, which also abuts Sun City. Now, at the time, the developer never even thought that young people would want to live there. So it was just assumed that there was age restrictions, that you had to be at least 55 years old to live there. And for decades, anytime a family would try to sneak in there, they would be evicted if they had children. Now, Chaz was a 16-year-old little skinny kid who was being physically abused by his stepfather in Phoenix. So he went to live with his grandparents in Youngtown. The grandparents went to the town council and said, you know, may we keep our child here temporarily? They said yes for 3 months, and they put a placard, actually, announcing that this family had a child.
Oh, my goodness.
They put it on the front lawn, and then the family went back there saying, look, our grandchild is, you know, he's 17. He only has maybe 9 months left until he's finished with high school. Can he just stay until he's done? And they said no, and they fined him. They fined the family $100 a day. And he was actually given the status of contraband. He was a contraband child. And not just that, but the town council members, several of them, circulated false rumors about him. They actually doctored a police report saying that he was a drug dealer when he, in fact, was not.
It sounds almost like those cases of where people want to keep, like, a pot-bellied pig in their apartment, and so they sneak it past the landlord. But these folks actually did, they weren't trying to sneak anything by, right?
Well, at first they were not at all. And no, actually they weren't at all. But they were basically, you know, he was basically human contraband.
Yeah.
And they were forced to move out. Well, actually what happened was that they appealed it. And it was a very uncomfortable time. The family was harassed for having a child there. And they appealed it to the Attorney General of Arizona. And he actually found out that there were no age restrictions written. And that it was just a house of cards. And so at that point, Youngtown became the first age-segregated community in human history. So it became desegregated, and interestingly, it was desegregation is never easy, and in this case, the seniors were marginalized all of a sudden, just like they are everywhere else in America, and young families moved in immediately. But in the long, and there has been more crime. But I talked to the police chief, and he said, on balance, it's at least now they have a real community and it's vibrant.
Andrew Blechman is my guest. His new book is called Leisureville: Adventures in America's Retirement Utopias. Aside from the age thing, how diverse are these communities? How much like one's neighbor is the average resident there?
They're not diverse.
So they're all white and upper middle class, or
it's basically if you look at it, I compare it to basically the fever measurement, about 98.6 white, because that's basically what they are. I mean, the village is about 98.6 white. You have very few minorities. In fact, HUD did a study in 1980 looking at different communities, and they found that predominantly white communities are much more likely to have age-segregated policies than our regular communities or more integrated communities. It's one way to keep the riffraff out.
Well, I don't know. What strikes me about that, though, is that, a lot of other communities other than white people are known for venerating their elderly more than white Americans do. The African-American community and the Latino community, it's much more likely that there are multi-generations living together.
Well, that's exactly why, actually, that those restrictions are put in place, so those people can't really get into these communities.
So you think they want to be there, they're just being kept out?
No, I'm not even sure they want to be there, although, I mean, there certainly are some in the villages, some African-Americans I met, who are very happy to be there. But I think you're right. I think they are less attracted to it right now.
Can you understand why people want to go to these places where they are, where everything's made for them? Because we do have a youth-oriented culture, and no one's going to sort of celebrate, the elderly necessarily in a general purpose community in the same way that they are in these retirement utopias, as you call them.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. We should be ashamed of the way we treat our elders. I mean, we just, we're fiercely youth-centric as a culture. And, we marginalize our elders, and then we, traditionally we've thrown them into dead-end nursing homes, which, they're depressed to be in there, and we're depressed to throw them in there, but we just do it. On top of that, retirement's a very new phenomenon. It's only maybe 50, 60 years old. So people don't really know what to do with it, and now people are growing older, and they're healthier, and they have more money. So, what do you do with the final third of your life? Now, a lot of people live, more than 50% now at this point of America lives in sprawl, suburban sprawl. How do you age in place in suburban sprawl? If you have to drive a mile or more just to get a quart of milk, let alone have human contact, that's a difficult place to age. On top of that, there is no direction home. Where are you supposed to go? I mean, at this, families are blown apart by geography. The average American moves 12 times in their lifetime. So there is no hometown anymore. Or if you are in your hometown, your children aren't there and your friends probably aren't there. So where do you go?
So are folks taking care of each other in these retirement communities?
Yes, they are. For the most part, they are. It's very much, people are thirsty. They're searching for community. And in these communities, they're finding it. But it's premised on segregation. And it's premised basically on a utopian vision where you can have a community that is gated and it is large and it is only with people who are older. And it doesn't work. Utopias fail and these do too.
Andrew Blechman is my guest. His new book is called Leisureville: Adventures in America's Retirement Utopias. We'll return to our conversation with him in a moment. You can join us by calling 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's informal courses for adults, offering summer escapes from the everyday. Short courses start in June. Curious? Details at smu.edu/think.
You're You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is author Andrew Bleckman. His new book is called Leisureville, Adventures in America's Retirement Utopias. Our number is 1-800-933-5372. The email address is think@kera.org. Andrew, you talked about the overwhelming nature of sort of everyone being white in these communities. What about gays and lesbians? Are they welcome?
You know, it's a different generation. Like, I did locate the lesbians there, but they're extraordinarily closeted. I had to seek them out, and I mean, humorously, I found them on a softball field. But they were good folks, but they were extremely, extremely closeted, and there was just not much you could do about that. That's just that generation. And I did find one transsexual as well, Wendy Marie. Who was a man and now is a woman, and very unusual stories you can imagine being in a community like this as a transsexual, and basically pretty closeted as well. Although the people who did know her and did know her story were accepting of her, which says a lot about the community. But she didn't seem to think she had a place there.
Well, and you write that you have a brother who's gay who's excited that they're going to put together now villages like this for gay and lesbian couples.
You know, it's fascinating. They're called affinity. Communities or retirement communities. Basically, whatever you might have in common, they'll throw together a community for you, or a developer will come up with one. They now have ones for gays and lesbians, yes, in the Southwest mainly, and in Palm Springs. You know, my brother thought it would be pretty nifty, but I think, because he doesn't want to be stuck with, you know, a regime where everyone has to be hetero and he's gay. But on top of that, though, I think he would be pretty disappointed with the canned environment that these places have. I mean, at the villages, they pump music out of lampposts and fake rocks everywhere. I mean, it's an unusual community, and it takes a certain type of person that would want to live there.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that, because maybe this is always going to be limited to a certain percentage of the population that is okay with the sort of Disneyfied lifestyle. It's not as though every... you know, a retired person who had sufficient means would want to live in these places, right?
Yes and no. Yes, you're right. I mean, the conservative estimates right now are that at least 12 million people will be living like this in the next decade. That's a chunk of population. They're extremely popular, and I would suspect that this will become basically the default way to live. For a large chunk of the population, maybe not a majority, but a large number of people. Look, Disney itself is very popular. Look how many people go there. Look how popular cruises are, and look how popular all-inclusive resorts are. It's the same trend. People want to just relax and have leisure, and not really think about things around them or be too involved in their communities outside of the gates. In the villages, they're basically governed by contract.
Yeah, in fact, they have their own media that sort of the newspapers only were allowed to report good news and that sort of thing.
Yeah, the developer is a billionaire who runs the place, and you know he invented it. You know, and you know he's certainly a brilliant businessman, but he also controls it. And there is no democracy really at the villages. You're looking at 100,000 people who are basically ruled by a developer. They don't really have a local government. You know, what government they have is the developer. And they don't really have any recourse when something goes wrong. He owns all the media. He owns the daily newspaper, which looks just like a newspaper. In many ways, it looks more beautiful than today's newspapers because he has a lot of money. He doesn't have to cut back on quality. He even has AP Wire, but it's basically just a propaganda organ. He owns several local TV stations with their own news program. He owns a local magazine, and he owns a local radio station. I mean, basically, people, once they're there, they don't leave. Department of Transportation in Florida did a study. I think something like 99% of trips, that emanate, from the home, return actually never leave campus. You know, often they're on golf carts or in cars, and people don't really leave. They don't really want to be on the outside world anymore. Plenty of people told me they don't want to know what's happening on the outside world, or if they do, they'd rather do it from the safety of their television.
You know, I have to tell you, I mean, the idea, it's hard to make it appeal to yourself when you're in your 30s, but do you think there's a possibility that the way you see this would change when you're 60?
Well, you know, it's certainly impossible. As one of my favorite characters, Mr. Midnight, told me, he goes, look, you know, I know what it's like to be young, but you don't know what it's like to be old. And he's absolutely right. I'm not 40 yet. I'm 39. But I still think segregation is never really a healthy way to live. I mean, the question is this: how do we? I'm looking at least to start a debate about this. I mean, there has been nothing until now written on this, nothing except for a few real estate puff pieces here and there. There's been absolutely no debate on the fact that 12 million Americans will probably choose to live this way shortly. Let me ask you this: can you point to one time in human history when segregation was a good idea? Is this how we want to live? I mean, and how is it that in the first time in human history that this has become a normal way to live, where our elders basically secede? And we're not even talking elderly; we're talking people 55 and older. I mean, how is it that children are less than equal? I mean, you can't discriminate housing-wise against African Americans or Jews or Asians anymore, like they used to in the old days. But you can discriminate against young families and children.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. My guest is Andrew Bleckman. His new book is called Leisureville, Adventures in America's Retirement Utopias. Let's speak to Ramus in Dallas. Hi, Ramus.
Yes, very interesting. You know, I live in communism for 19 years, and I recognize communism when I hear about it. And it sounds like communism to me, the way those communities are being run. But, another thing I want to say is that these communities are going to be multiplying very fast once the baby boomers retire in large numbers. And that's when the Enron money and all the money that went missing from people's retirement is going to surface. And I think it's going to be a lot of resentment towards the people living in these communities. And they're going to be targets to criminals.
Thanks for your call. What do you think about that, Andrew?
Well, I wouldn't call them communists. I would call them controlled, but it's more of a voluntary control. If anything, it's almost raw capitalism. And people are basically governed by contract. They're not interested in democracy, but they're not interested necessarily in communism. They want to be governed by a corporation. Basically, they've traded in the ballot box for the corporate suggestion box.
Of course.
But I think there will be a lot of resentment. And, I mean, that's what worries me. I mean, look, I'm not in this just to, like, you know, rail on people who choose this way of lifestyle. I can fully understand why people are doing it. But what happens when the kids whose schools are not being funded properly and who don't see their elders very often and who have to peer through the gates and watch them play on you know, dozens of golf courses, how generous and how kind is this generation going to be to their elders when it comes to paying for Social Security, when it comes to paying for Medicaid and Medicare, and when it comes to paying for $10 trillion of debt? The baby boomers lived very large. Ever since the Reagan era, we've been living on debt, and that debt has to be paid for. And pretty soon there's going to be a lot fewer younger people and a lot more older people. And I'm not sure how keen the younger people are going to be making generational sacrifices when they're left outside the gates.
We have an email from Matthew in Dallas who writes, I'm wondering if your guest looked at progressive communities in rural towns, communes rather, in rural towns such as Eureka Springs or Marfa, Texas. How do these towns and their cultures compare with retirement utopias?
Well, I think those are very small affinity communities, and I think they make a lot of sense. You may have like a group of 12 people or more who decide to basically live together in a group house or in a compound, and I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, oddly, but this age segregated thing has become so unusual at this point. You're talking about affinity groups. There's one, the Pizza Pope, the guy who owns
Domino's guy. Yeah.
He started one in Florida called Ave Maria for Catholics. And interestingly, it's going to have an age-segregated component. So if you're pro-life, you can choose to live with children or you can choose to make sure you don't live with children, in a pro-life community. It's hard to wrap my head around it.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. My guest is Andrew Bleckman. The new book is called Leisureville, Adventures in America's Retirement Utopias. Let's go next to Jim in Maybank. Hi, Jim.
Hey. I lived in one of these things back in the, from, let's say, 92 to 94, out in Oregon. And I had lived previously in Arlington. My first wife was terminal. It was a real mixed bag because they wanted active seniors, whatever that means.
So when your health is deteriorating, you're not as welcome.
No. The house. One of the things that drew us to it was the cost of housing there. But we paid school taxes just like everybody else. In fact, pay more than up there back then than I do now where I live. But a lot of the people, they get caught up in all these little rules and regulations. You know, you got to bush that infringes past your property line or something. A lot of it was really silly.
You know, it's interesting that there's actually one of these communities. It's actually age integrated, but a community in California that has a 30-pound weight limit for our pets. And there's a woman who has to repeatedly weigh in her overweight poodle because it's always somewhere between 29 and 31 pounds.
And they are, these folks tend to be very, everybody polices each other, or not everybody, but a lot of people do.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically self-enforced is the reality. I mean, if someone saw a child with a backpack leaving a house, it's not going to be the police that are going to report this. It's going to be neighbors who report it.
Of course, you know, people who live in these places are going to argue, well, look, this is what we've chosen for ourselves, and we're not trying to enforce this on anyone who didn't willingly move into the community. Well, yep. What's your response to that?
I think they're absolutely right. You know, and the fact is, whoever moves into one of these communities signs a contract. You know, and as you see, you know, as the head of the homeowners association in Sun City told me, and he's basically the de facto mayor, although he really isn't. He's the closest thing they have to one. He says, look, you know, I'm sorry if your grandchild's orphaned, but you know he can't move in here. You signed the rules. That's that. You're gonna have to leave.
We have an email from Karen who writes, why does your guest seem to have an agenda against retirement communities? We've raised our kids, sent them through school, had young adults live with us past the time when fledglings leave the nest. Our kids grew up with a sense of entitlement, and we bought that for them. When I'm ready to sell my home and downsize my life, I think the option of moving to a retirement community is attractive. Is he afraid his parents are spending money he thinks should come to him when they die? Why is he presuming to criticize a way of life that mature, intelligent people choose?
You know, I'm not sure I'm looking to criticize it so much as talk about the possible repercussions of it. I mean, she brings up a point. She's right. She contributed, and she, you know, at some point she wants to opt out, and that's her right. But like I say, we're not talking about people in their 70s. We're talking about people in their 50s. So I think it's slightly a different situation. You know, and I've received email from someone in the Villages that basically said, you know, quit your whining, pay for your own kids' education. But, you know, I don't know. My grandmother retired on a very small pension in Center City, Philadelphia, and she always paid her taxes and always paid into the school system, and I don't remember her complaining about it.
Do you think had she had the means, do you think she would have liked to live in a place like this?
No, I don't think it was her style. I can see why people are doing it, but I don't think it would have been her style.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. The email address is think@kera.org. Let us go next to John in Dallas. Hi, John.
Hi, Chris. I don't know if your guest, what's your first name again? I'm sorry.
Andrew.
Andrew, I don't know if you're familiar with Malcolm Gladwell's writings.
Yes, of course.
You see, there's a little bit been written on this in the sense of he talks about the correlation between having older professional people and, I guess, people with some, community memory to be in neighborhoods to help create stable communities and provide social capital so that, again, there's correlations between crime being reduced, children graduating from school, and things like that. So it's not necessarily that they're so involved, but it's a correlation of having clergymen, doctors, and such there. And obviously the people that are leaving are the people who have the most experience, a lot of social capital, a lot to give. So I guess I'd like to see if you want to discuss those ramifications.
Look, we learn from our elders. I mean, let's face it. Elders exist for a reason. You know, they've raised us, and we can also, you know, learn a lot from them. To have them, you know, seceding en masse from our society it's certainly, you know, it's legal, but it's certainly concerning. I don't see how it can't be concerning.
Do you think that they're more likely to secede if they live in one of these places? Because there are people who, you know, quit working and they live within their community, but they don't interact very much. Are these the same individuals who are moving into these active adult communities?
I don't think so, because I mean, like I said, they're active adults. So you're having people who are, you know, who can still run marathons without even a whole lot of a blink, you know, in terms of training. I live in a very traditional age-integrated community. I'm in Massachusetts, and you know, we have about 10,000 people here, and you know, on our select board, that's our town council. We have someone in who is about in his late 30s, and we have someone who's in her mid 70s. And everybody contributes. Our neighborhood is age-integrated. My little daughter has plenty of grandmother step-ins, and I have plenty of people to learn from. You know, I have my neighbor who's retired across the street teaches me how to brew beer. And he's a he's a barbecue genius. So I learned barbecue from him, and he loves to interact with me as well. I mean, maybe this is too much to ask for in today's world. Maybe people just want to opt out. And like I said, it's perfectly legal, and I can fully understand why some people want to do it. And let me make clear, I greatly enjoyed the vast majority of the people I met in the villages. There's some really wonderful people down there. It's really not about that. It's about how do we want to really live as a society, and what happens when millions of people start just dropping out. It's one thing if only a few handful of people do, but what happens when it really becomes quite a movement? And I think it really is becoming very, very popular.
Let's go next to Richard in Dallas. Hi, Richard.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm finding this very interesting. I lived in the villages for a while, so I know a little bit whereof the author speaks. And I have a couple of comments, if I may.
Sure.
One is about the fact that these places do not pay school taxes. And that, in terms of the villages anyway, is not correct. The villages is in at least two or maybe parts of three counties in Florida, and we pay, or at least I paid school taxes in my county, number one. Number two, there are two or three charter schools in the villages that are supported by the villages as well as the people that send their children there. And by the way, there are a lot of children in the area that go to these schools in the villages, so they're not bereft of children. The other thing is the issue of elders being segregated. And yes, some of those people stay there and don't go very far, but many of them, and I know one for sure, a brother and sister-in-law of mine, they have homes in another. They have a home in another place, so they go back and they participate in their hometown. So I don't think either one of those issues are totally valid.
Richard, thank you very much for your call. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll get Andrew's response after that. Andrew Blechman is my guest. His new book is called Leisureville, Adventures in America's Retirement Utopias. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372 or by sending email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's informal courses for adults, offering summer escapes from the everyday. Short courses start in June. Curious? Details at smu.edu/think.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is author Andrew Blechman, whose new book is called Leisureville, Adventures in America's Retirement Utopias. Our phone number is 1-800-933-5372. Email address is think@kera.org. Let's speak next to Barbara in Cedar Hill. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. I recently turned 60, and I guess one of the leading edge of the baby boom generation, I think we're going to need a huge variety of different types of communities to consider moving into, depending on our physical and emotional health. But I certainly would be willing to consider living in this type of place. Presently, I live in a regular residential neighborhood, suburban neighborhood, where there's lots of teenagers driving cars with noisy, loud music that penetrates my house with all the windows closed all times of day and night, and screeching children playing in the neighborhood. And at my age, I think I'm ready to hear a little bit more peace and quiet and a little less craziness from the outside world.
Thank you so much for your call. Andrew, it sounds like a lot of the people that you met had similar beliefs.
Yeah, I mean, I find that entirely understandable. I mean, society's become less and less civil, and more expensive, or at least it seems to be more and more expensive. There are a lot of people who just, have had it. And, it's certainly understandable why these communities are so popular. I mean, if they weren't so popular, then a place like the villages wouldn't exist. And there's 1,500 of them now scattered across the United States, most of them far smaller. They're growing greatly. And, yeah, the baby boomers are actually revolutionizing, as they have everywhere else in the different eras, how people will retire. I suspect that you will see different types of communities built. These right now, a lot of these communities are being built actually north of the Snow Belt. I mean, north of the Sun Belt, in the Snow Belt, closer to cities and closer to families. But they still want to be, I guess, segregated. I mean, interestingly, one thing to look at, Pulte Homes, which owns Del Webb, and Del Webb is basically the, one of the biggest brand names in age segregation, is building these communities, and they're called Anthem. I'm not sure if you have one down there. I think you might. I know there's a few scattered around the country. Anthem actually has an age-integrated community, and then attached to it is an age-segregated community so that people can kind of have the best of both worlds, I guess, as it were. They can visit the melting pot and then go back safely to where they don't have to worry about having youngsters around them.
We have an email from Mike who asks that we get your perspective on an Obama presidency versus McCain. I guess he's written out Senator Clinton at this point. He says, entitlements have set the stage for a war between the generations, and contemplation of the future for the gated retirement community must address how different the next 8 years might be for these communities, depending on whether we have a 45-year-old Chicago housing expert or a 72-year-old Arizonan in the White House.
I think, you know, this reader brings up, or this listener brings up some very interesting points. I don't think it's appropriate for me to get into current politics. But, yeah, I mean, if you look at Arizona, you're looking at a tremendous amount of housing development and sprawl. You're looking at someone else who's also coming from more condensed, you know, South Chicago. Two very, very different experiences. You know, how that will play out or which is better than the other, you know, I don't see that as being, you know, my role. I don't really see this as my being role. Even, you know, I do talk about my, you know, I do come to some judgments, and I openly talk about my biases, but mainly in the book. You know, this is not like some kind of stealth thing where, you know, I try to, you know, pull the wool over the reader's eyes and you know, and but the reality is, you know, I do have a lot of concerns about this. I mean, do we really want to promote communities where age, you know, birth certificates are checked at the gates?
Could you ever imagine a scenario in which you'd want to live among other people in their late 30s who have toddlers?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, such a thing is tempting. I mean, it's tempting to opt out and be amongst people just like yourself, which is what pre-civil rights America was just like. It's a lot easier. You know, we have a lot in common with other young parents. You know, you can talk about diapers. You can talk about, you know, what's the best baby stroller. You can share babysitters. And you can obsess about the school systems.
Of course, the babysitters live two towns over, I guess, if you all live together. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak next to Beth in Dallas. Hi, Beth.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
A few things. One, we do have something similar to this, and it's called college. I lived in a dorm, and I was around people all my same age, and we all ate together, and we all had similar interests at the time. And now I see my 80-year-old parents have just moved into what I call the Ritz of the college dorm in our area. And it's been very helpful for them. I don't see them opting out of the world. I see them opting into a better place for them. My mom has Parkinson's and cannot drive, so she was totally reliant upon my father. And now they have shuttle buses that can take her shopping and, you know, there's art classes, and it keeps her mind engaged. She plays Wii with my son when we go visit. And my dad can still go with his buddies who he's been playing golf with for 40 years all around the city. He goes to the Sharks games when they're in town and doesn't feel guilty about leaving my mom housebound.
I think that sounds wonderful.
But my question was, is there an age limit? She got in under the wire before her Parkinson's became, you know, I guess they had to check that she had Parkinson's and had to be cleared from the doctor. But at what point are you no longer eligible?
Oh, for these communities?
Yes.
I'm not sure it's a matter of no longer being eligible. I think it's when do you begin to be eligible. And that age is 55. One person in a household has to be at least 55 years old. There is no end age. It's basically until, you know, you can no longer take care of yourself unless you're in a different kind of community that has continuing care. I mean, I fully understand why, A, people are attracted to these, and why a lot of. I mean, it must be a tremendous relief to have your parents in a community like this so that you don't have to worry about them. You know that they're cared for. You know that they have friends. You know that they're not sitting around at home listening to a police scanner, but they're playing golf, or they're going for walks, or they're doing arts and crafts, something. So in a lot of ways, it is a beautiful thing. But, you know, it's also, you know, let me say once again, we're talking about people, I think, in their 70s and 80s We're not talking about people in their 50s. The other thing is this. These places, I guess they are utopian, and they do fail. Sun City is getting very ratty around the edges. The reason it's getting ratty around the edges is because the people that live there no longer really want to reinvest into the community because they don't care about the next generation that's going to come after them. Interestingly, the same way I talked about the canary in the coal mine with the school bond measures and the residents on the outside of Sun City versus the residents on the inside, that same generational strife is actually happening now because people are living so long. It's now happening within Sun City. All right. So you now have the older old in Sun City fighting with the younger old in Sun City. The older old basically see themselves as too old to really use the recreation centers, or they're happy with the way they are, and the younger old want lap pools. I mean, a lot of these pools are just like kidney bean pools where you can dip and get back out again, which was fine in the 60s and the 70s, but people today demand more, or they want more. They want lap pools, they might want a steam room, whatever. And even though it doesn't cost a penny for the older old to have these rec centers renovated, they still resent it, and there are actually lawsuits because they're afraid that it will raise their property values. Now, I guess that's where segregation goes. You're looking at splintering and splintering and splintering. So it's not only is it happening between communities and the outside, but it's happening within the communities. These communities tend not to age well. Yes, they are beautiful right now. The Village is a beautiful place right now. There's no doubt about it. If you're into that sort of lifestyle, it is a beautiful place. But what will it look like in 30 years?
1-800-933-5372 is our number. An email from Sally in Arlington says, I'm 62 and I cannot imagine living in a community of self-centered peers who choose to shut the gate to the younger generation and refuse to contribute to society at large. When my grandparents were in their 70s, they volunteered their time at the local elementary school. What did you find, Andrew, with regard to volunteerism among these folks?
Well, you know, you're looking at a large group of people, but even the volunteers among there will say that volunteerism, you know, is not as certainly as much as they would hope it to be. But there is volunteerism. You know, don't get that wrong. There are people there who volunteer. There are different types of volunteerism, and let's face it, all of it's good. But there are definitely different levels. I mean, there's some people who, such as this person's parents, I believe, who will volunteer maybe in the local school system as tutors. So there's real contact there. There's mentoring of the younger generation, you know, and that's really trying to make the world a better place. And there is some of that in the villages. Interestingly, in Sun City, most they call themselves a city of volunteers, but the way their volunteering is designed is that they volunteer for themselves so that they can reduce their taxes. There's lots of volunteering, although less and less for the baby boomers, because the baby boomers rather just write a check when it comes to city services. But they basically have their own road cleaning crews, and they have their own, volunteer sheriff's department of sorts. But, you know, then again, a lot of today's criminals aren't scared off by someone with a hearing aid. In the villages, you have a lot of volunteerism, and I don't know how to say this without... Well, it's basically centered around party. It'll usually centered around a really good time, which is fine, and it raises money. But it strikes me as, you know, they could just as easily be raising money for people in Burma in terms of how close they are as to people on the other side of the gates. There's really no contact.
Let me ask you this, Andrew. Do you think people are just retiring too early?
I don't know. I mean, I would love to retire, so I don't know if there is such a thing as too early. But I think it's not a matter of retiring too early. It's a matter of, you know, context of how long we're living. You know, retirement, as I was saying, is a new phenomenon. People used to work until they couldn't. They basically worked until they died. You know, it's only with Social Security, which started very slowly, much more slowly than people imagine it, and then with the with more generous company pensions, which are actually fast disappearing, and then with increased health care, that people actually were able to live past what would historically be a retirement age. With the first Social Security check set at 65, most people never saw them because they only lived to 60. Now, so people are now routinely living into their 80s. So they have a third of their life left. And let's say you're a civil servant or a teacher or something of that sort. You're retiring at 55. So what do you do from 55 to 85? Now, what that woman said, I think, does resonate with a lot of us, which is, my God, her parents gave back. You know, they wanted to be around young people. They wanted to contribute and give back, and they wanted to be active and involved. They didn't want to self-segregate. There is something in our gut, I think, that tells most of us that that's a more admirable thing to do. Doesn't mean we have to do it, but that there's something admirable about it. Versus, I mean, what is the message that the people who are going to these communities are really sending to younger generations? You know, and yes, some of these communities do pay school taxes, and yes, some of them don't.
So do you think that, I mean, what do we need to do in the broader world in order to keep people, I guess we can't call them elderly, you call them pre-elderly in the book. What do we need to do to keep the pre-elderly, get them to stay put as opposed to picking up and moving to these retirement utopias?
Well, we could treat them with respect. That might be the first thing. You know, it's a two-sided coin. I mean, our elders are abandoning us, but we've abandoned them already. So, I think it's time that we appreciate people that are older than us and that they might actually have something to offer us and treat them accordingly. The other thing is there's some wonderful programs out there that actually help retirees get reinvolved and reconnected into their society, how to mentor, how to do all sorts of things. There's actually like a Peace Corps now for older citizens, but it's domestic. If you go to my website, I have a tab that tells you all about how to like reengage. On top of that, I think we need to, you know, design communities where people can actually grow old in. I mean, I don't know how you grow old in suburban sprawl. It's a hard place to grow old. I mean, one thing that does work are something called NORCs. It's something that Europe just calls, you know, life. In America, we call it NORCs, and that's called it stands for naturally occurring retirement communities. It's actually places like Center City, Philadelphia, where my grandmother retired, places where she could actually get an apartment. They might have a doorman so she can feel safe and as an elderly woman by herself. But she could also walk to the corner and get a newspaper, to get a quart of milk, to get some bread, and she could be surrounded by people her own age as well as other people. You know, life, you know, everything around us. So it's really how do we design the communities that we live in. It's a bit late for that, sadly, but we certainly could encourage more of that. I think age-targeted housing makes sense. You're not outlawing or forbidding someone like Chaz to live with his grandparents for a year because he's being physically abused and beaten at home. Basically, you're saying, you know, you're designing communities that have houses made with just two bedrooms. You know, so it's more likely that you're going to get an older couple in there rather than a younger couple, but it's not legally required. The other thing we could do is we could say, okay, if this is what we're going to do, let's let these communities be there. But maybe 55 is a bit young. You know, at the time, 55 was a bit older. You know, 55 was maybe what we think of as like 65 now, maybe even 70. But now 55 is young. And we, you know, maybe we raise the age to 75 and we say, and then, you know, if everyone in these communities was 75 or 80, I think I would have had a lot less concerns about it.
Andrew Bleckman's new book is called Leisureville, Adventures in America's Retirement Utopias. Andrew, thanks very much for spending the hour with us.
Thank you very much. I greatly appreciate it, Chris.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.